Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome back to The Bulwark. Thanks for watching. I am Ben Parker of The Bulwark, here with AEI economist and expert Stan Voiger to talk about the gold in Fort Knox. Stan, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. So the news is that co-president Elon Musk and maybe actual president Donald Trump are going to go to Fort Knox this week to make sure that the gold is still there. Now, we have no reason to believe that the gold isn't there. But I was wondering, why is there gold in Fort Knox in the first place? What purpose does it serve?
Well, it currently doesn't serve much of a purpose at all. It is there because the value of the dollar used to be explicitly linked to gold. It was expressed in terms of gold. And so until the early 1970s, not only was the value of the dollar expressed in gold, some counterparts were allowed to come to the U.S. government and say, we have some dollars, we'd like to exchange them for gold. Basically, foreign governments and central banks could do that. President Nixon ended that. He ended the system of fixed exchange rates that was built on that premise of dollar convertibility to gold. And ever since then, you know, basically we kept the gold and we don't do anything with it. It just kind of sits there as a symbol of our might and power.
Okay, so we once had a gold standard, meaning you could, in theory, take a dollar and say, I'd like $1 worth of gold, please. We no longer have that. But I looked it up, and at the current price of gold, there's something like $400 to $500 billion worth of gold there. So even if we went back to a gold standard, there's not nearly enough gold to be useful for anything, right?
Yeah. So it certainly wouldn't be enough to be able to guarantee the exchangeability of all the dollars out there. In fact, that's why we ended the system, right? It's because we didn't have enough gold to fully cover the value of the dollar. So we ended up setting an artificially low dollar price of gold that led to constant speculative attacks on the dollar. And that's why Nixon walked away from convertibility and from the Bretton Woods system, as they call it. And so, no, that's right. I mean, of course, one thing we could do with that gold and the other gold we have, I think in total it's something like $750 billion, is we could gradually sell it, in an effort to lower the debt or something like that. It's not totally clear what the point of that is, right? It would just, we would reduce the value of one asset and then, reduce the value of some liabilities. It wouldn't make us richer because our debt would
like
be lower.
Paying off your credit card bill, right? You take your cash, you pay off the debt. It's net neutral, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But that's something we could do. A little more at sort of the next level of gimmickiness, you could revalue without selling and then say, because currently the dollars that we have are not valued at the market price of gold. They're valued at something like $40. And what do I know about the price of gold? Anyway, it's significantly undervalued. And so one thing that people have talked about is you could revalue up to the market value of gold, and that would create sort of an artificial capital gain for the U.S. federal government, which we could count as income, and then we could use that income to offset tax cuts or new spending or something like that.
Explain that a little bit. Why is the gold currently undervalued? Why don't we just value it?
Because we never updated the price that we officially attached to gold. You remember, so under the Bretton Woods system, there was an official dollar value of gold.
Okay.
And so, you know, at some point we just stopped devaluing the dollar officially, and we kept some artificially low price of gold. That's just been on the record ever since.
So it exists on paper only.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course, it doesn't mean anything. Okay. But we could change that, and then on paper we would have a gain that we could then use in the sort of in the gimmicky budget math way that Congress likes to offset new spending or tax cuts.
Okay, but
I'm not saying we should do that. I'm saying
because we're talking about, like, let's say you were talking about,
we could do it with all sorts of things the government owns. The government also owns a ton of real estate, for example.
Right.
You don't normally think of an appreciation in the value of public lands, or if there's new minerals that are found, or if office buildings that the government owns here in DC, when they go up or down in value, we don't usually think of that as affecting the federal budget in a year-over-year sense. But we could, you know, take that into account.
But even if we did that with the gold, like, let's say we were to say, oh, we just found $750 billion, whatever it was, the national debt is like north of $30 trillion, right?
Of course, of course. Yeah. No, for sure.
Debt. Yeah, we're talking like tiny drops in the bucket.
For sure. Tiny drop in the bucket for the debt. But it could be a meaningful offset for some of the new spending plans we have, right? For example, Republicans want to spend $175 billion in additional outlays on border security, on immigration, an anti-immigration measure. Mm-hmm. But that you could cover with the proceeds from the gold sale. Right? So it is that order of magnitude. It's not a meaningless amount.
But this is where sort of economics always became really tricky for me. So you say,
to be clear, this is not really economics, right? This is fake budgetary accounting.
Right.
This is not
right. Okay. So right. So you say, oh well, on paper, this amount of gold went from being, you know, $20 million to being $400 billion, whatever it was. Therefore, we have all this extra money, but the gold is the same.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, of course. Now, in fairness, it's not like we use the gold for anything, right? It's really only there as a store of value. So
okay. So it's basically useless, and I imagine we're paying some amount of money to keep it secure there. So, I mean, maybe actually the best thing to do is to gradually sell it off. I don't know. At least then we wouldn't have to pay to guard it, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's probably a reasonable thing to do. It's really for historical reasons. I think there's probably a large enough subset of the population that really thinks that if we sell off the gold, it means the end of civilization is nigh. And so that's why we're not selling it off. It's that kind of symbolic argument, cultural decline, the idea of the financial system is still based on gold. But yeah, there's no reason not to sell it off, right? I mean, it's not really in vogue anymore. But of course, privatization was a big deal for a while in the 80s and 90s, and you'd sell off airports and roads and those kinds of things. You know, this is much easier to sell off than those things, because you don't have to worry about what people are going to do with the gold once they have it. Whereas if you sell off an airport, someone still has to run it, and you know, there's all sorts of operational questions that follow. Whereas if we just sell the gold, then you know, we've sold the gold. Yeah.
Right, and there's someone makes jewelry out of it or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's all super interesting. I'm so glad they're going to go confirm that the useless gold is still sitting there being useless.
Didn't Mnuchin go there to look at the eclipse during Trump's first term?
Yeah, I think he did. I think Mnuchin was the first person like in 40 years or something to go and actually go to Fort Knox. You know, first person who doesn't normally work there to go and confirm the gold is there. So it's there. Just why? Okay, so some of the other loony ideas that we've seen, I don't know, you'll tell me whether or not they're loony. They sound loony to me. One of them
was, it's probably better. Honestly, it's hard to think of better ways for Trump and Musk to use their time than to go to Fort Knox for a few days. You know, at least they're not doing damage actively while they're there, I assume.
That is a great point. I take it all back. They should spend all of their time at Fort Knox. They should never leave the vault. You're right. You totally changed my mind. They should go there. Okay, so there are a few other maybe wacky economic ideas. They certainly sounded wacky to me that Trump and Musk have put forward. One of them was Trump said he wants to create a strategic cryptocurrency reserve. Now, I know we have a strategic petroleum reserve, which is a bunch of billions of barrels of oil or however many it is, in case there's war, in case there's a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico, shocks to the supply. It's like, okay, we have a little extra oil saved. How would that work with Bitcoin?
Well, it wouldn't, but the people who currently own Bitcoin, they would benefit if we bought a bunch of Bitcoin, because the price of Bitcoin would go up. And that's what they want. Right? The people who are heavily invested in Bitcoin, their whole the whole use case for Bitcoin is speculation. So okay. They want the price of Bitcoin to go up. And so they would benefit from a massive purchase by the federal government. And so that's what they want. And then they have backfilled that idea with nonsense arguments in favor of a strategic Bitcoin reserve. One is somewhat similar to what you sometimes hear about gold, which is that if we are in an economic downturn or if the reserve position of the dollar is undermined, perhaps Bitcoin would appreciate. And so it would, we'd be able to hedge our losses somehow. It's never totally clear why. Yeah, that's not totally clear how that would work. The other one really is something like, if civilization crumbles, we can use Bitcoin as a payment device. And so it really is like the oil, right? If we run out of other ways to make our payments, we can use the Bitcoin. But it's always.
But we all still have computers and ways to charge them and to guarantee transactions online and things like that. Yeah. But I mean, it's the initial collapse. Sure.
If the apocalypse were to come, surely the gold would be more useful than Bitcoin, I think.
Right.
Fair to say. No, it's all nonsense. But the idea is, I think, for them to just get a bailout as an industry. I'm sure they wouldn't. And once we have a strategic Bitcoin reserve, of course, they would say, oh, but we need a strategic Ethereum reserve. We need a strategic, Trump Dogecoin reserve, et cetera.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The whole thing is to just keep pumping up the price of their assets.
Great. Well, that doesn't sound corrupt at all. So glad we're doing that. Okay. And the last one.
Now, if there's one thing we do have, as I think really what they want to avoid. So the federal government owns a lot of Bitcoin right now, like $20 billion worth of it that we've seized from various criminals. Because, of course, there's a lot of criminals who use Bitcoin. And so I think really their sort of more minimalist desire is for us not to sell off that $20 billion in Bitcoin and instead for the federal government to just keep it. Right, because if we sell it off, that puts downward pressure on prices.
Yeah. Okay. So
I think that's the more minimalist version of the agenda.
Okay. Well, that's maybe marginally better from a corruption point of view. Okay. So the last thing we wanted to talk about is Trump's executive order directing the heads of the Treasury Department and the Commerce Department to establish a sovereign wealth fund. So this is a thing that a bunch of other countries have, where my understanding is, it's basically like an investment fund for the government, right? I mean, you can explain it better than I can, sure. Does it make sense to make one? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, so the countries that are most often associated with this are countries that have that run large budget surpluses, right? Smallish oil and gas producing countries, right? That just on a year-over-year basis run large surpluses. And so they, just like we have a national debt, they have a national stockpile of past surpluses.
And that's
usually, so you have to do something with it.
Right. That's usually because they have like a government company that sells petroleum products or whatever it is, right? Like it's a national monopoly that sells gas and oil, right? Which we don't have.
Yeah, like Saudi Arabia or UAE or Norway is sort of the most famous Western country that has one. And so that's what they're trying to mimic. Of course, the US does not have these year-over-year large surpluses that we need something to do with. And so that justification, I think, is not really reasonable here. The other context in which other countries have these large asset managers, for lack of a better word, is in the pensions context, where if you have a large funded pension fund, right, so where people pay in on those payments, then sit in the fund until they're paid out, right? That often leads to large accumulated amounts of funds as well. So for example, the California Public Sector Employee Fund has large amounts of assets in it. At the federal level, the Medicare Trust Fund and the Social Security Trust Fund have large amounts of assets in it. So the Social Security Trust Fund, is about, I think, $2.5 trillion, right? So that's real money.
Yeah.
And so right now at the federal level, those are basically invested in treasury bonds, right? In risk-free government debt. You could pursue a more aggressive investment strategy there, right? That's what Norway does with its sovereign wealth fund. That's what a lot of pension funds do. CalPERS, the California Pension Fund, invests much more aggressively than the Social Security Trust Fund. The Netherlands has a large public sector pension fund that also invests much more aggressively than Social Security Trust Fund. Now, the question is that wise? And I would say no, right? So the reason why you can get higher returns by investing in other assets that are not sovereign debt, that are not treasury bonds, is because those assets are riskier, right? So you're really just, you're taking more risk with these investments. So you have a higher expected return, but also a higher risk of losses. Now, the only reason to make that kind of shift is if you think that the people who will be doing the investing for the federal government are better at assessing that risk return trade-off than market parties. And that's just quite implausible. I think especially because having the federal government do it comes with a pretty obvious set of downsides. One, once you start using, say, the Social Security Trust Fund to invest in private companies, the federal government would become a very large shareholder in a lot of private companies and could start demanding that those companies do all sorts of things that the government wants them to do. That could also just be straight up corrupt ways of using the money, right? You funnel it to your political allies. And I think, you know, we're already, I think, seeing enough of that. I don't know that we need to expand the scope for that dramatically. But of course, Trump and some of his allies would like to dramatically extend the scope for those kinds of corrupt actions.
What about on the other side? It seems to me that if you have $2 trillion in the Social Security Trust Fund, that basically you're, in a way, sort of forcing Americans to buy government debt, right? Because it's their money that they're paying into the trust fund, at least in theory, right?
And then you'd have to sell the debt to someone else. That's right.
And so does that make it easier or harder for the government to borrow money? Because like they'd have to actually go out and sell it, right? As opposed to forcing people to
buy. It'll make it harder, exactly, right? Because now we would not have these intra-government holdings of sovereign debt. Instead, we'd have to sell those bonds on the open market. Yeah, that's right. And so that would make it harder, probably put some upward pressure on interest rates. Yeah, it's hard to see major advantages to this scheme.
Okay, so it sounds like we're 0-3. It sounds like the gold in Fort Knox doesn't serve a purpose. The strategic Bitcoin reserve doesn't serve any useful purpose. And the Federal Sovereign Wealth Fund also doesn't really make a lot of sense for a country like the United States that runs a massive budget deficit. So 0-3, you agreed?
That's right, though. I think we agreed that it would be good for Trump and Musk to spend significant amounts of time at Fort Knox.
Yes, on that we totally agree. 1-1 on that. Stan Voiger, thanks so much for joining me and explaining this all to me, to everyone watching The Bulwark.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.